What's going on, everybody? Welcome in to Crossing Broadcast on a sunny Thursday afternoon. The rain has stopped. My sump pump is taking a much needed break after serving me successfully for the last 3 days. We're going to talk about Philly sports. We got a lot of Philly stuff to talk about today. We've got them off to a kind of start. We have is there too much advertising on the right field wall? Is that why Nick Castellanos can't field or hit right now? We're going to dive into that a little bit. We're going to talk about the Eagles. Is Hassan Reddick chasing sacks? Should they have let him go? I think that my Eagles sort of unofficial ban or hiatus, we're going to end that today. We will talk about the Birds a little bit. We will talk about the Sixers. And Joel Embiid returning to the lineup. What are your thoughts on the playoffs? Do you have expectations? Do you not have expectations? Are you just going into it pragmatically with an open mind? We will talk about that as well. John Tortorella delivered another interesting, epic press conference the other night. We'll probably get into that a little bit. And some random topics here and there as we started off here on a Thursday afternoon. Russ will be with us probably around 12:30-ish, but Trevor is joining us again to fill in today. Trevor Harris from Upper Bowl Podcast. Let's bring him on.
What's up, my guy? Not much.
Thanks for coming on.
Always. I will say this. I was just at Verizon trying to get my phone set up, and that was the quickest thing, but the only bad part is it's going to take 6 hours to get it all fully working, I like to say, to get all the...
Well, I appreciate you taking a break from setting your phone up to help co-host. You know, Russ, we're just... It's Russ's world. We're just living in it, right? He just kind of tells me when he's available, and then I work around his schedule. Russ is on the money-making side of the business, as I think people are aware now. So then he does Snow the Goalie, and he's got... you know, he pops up on the show here. He does his Monday show, and he co-hosts this show with me. But Russ is a big wig on the American side of the company. So all of the money-making, legal, sports betting stuff, he's very tied into that. I don't know how I feel about my financial security being that closely tied to Rush Joy, but here we are nonetheless. our guest for today, somebody returning to the program, I think, for a third time. He is a fine mountaineer and the host of Sports Bash on 97.3 ESPN. Everybody, welcome Mike Gill back to the program. What's up, man?
No studio audience, huh?
No studio audience, no. That was good clapping from you, though. How have you been, man?
I have been very busy. I just got back from Clearwater not too long ago. And, yeah, I'm cruising. I'm getting ready for, I'm going to London for the Phillies.
Ah, very good.
Be in Brazil.
You're going to Brazil?
It looks like it.
Wow. Okay. So now how do you feel about going down there? I mean, because a lot of people aren't hot on it. I'm all about it because I think it's like great opportunity. I'm doing all the Sepultura jokes on the website, you know. but the season ticket holders aren't happy because they lost the game. I love it for a variety of reasons.
An extra game, number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're not losing a game, really. You were gifted an extra game that now is going away. I love these like remote, like being, you know, you say you were a mountaineer. That's the thing about college is like you go to like these remote spots and just kind of like go to a game like where West Virginia plays somebody in Charlotte and you're like, let's just go to Charlotte. It's like a bowl game.
Yeah, like the Duke's Mayo Bowl of the NFL. Or when I went to it, it was the Meineke Car Care Bowl, I think. We beat Hakeem Nix. Hakeem Nix was like the big player for they had like TJ Yates or something, I think, like that. Was the
Yates of Hell?
Guess my age. I was at the Music City Bowl, and the freshman quarterback for Ole Miss was Eli Manning.
Oh, well, was it 03?
A little earlier than that, man.
02?
It was like 1,000 or 1, maybe.
2,000, okay. Not so the year 2001.
You're 47.
I'm 47.
There you go.
Yeah, I was going to guess 37 because you look young at heart anyways, and you like to travel still.
I got to say.
I like to travel, and I was in Clearwater Beach for 7 days, and I ran it like I was a mountaineer, man.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, I mean, do they have good IPA in Brazil? Are you going to be – is that what you're going to be looking for in Sao Paulo?
So the trip is in Rio. You go to Rio for like 4 days. The Philly Sports Trip guys, Vince and that crew – They're going to, they're doing it right. So they're going to Rio for 4 days, and then they're going to Sao Paulo just for the game.
I see. Okay.
That's how smart. Girlfriend to go with you, because she wants to go to Rio, has no interest in the game or Sao Paulo. But when I said they're going to Rio, she said, now I'm in.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, because Rio is where the Copacabana is.
Rio's got the beach. Yeah.
The beach, yeah.
A little bit more sketchy, I guess.
And yes. The Jesus statue, right? Christ the Redeemer. He's in Rio, right? Because Kyle got some criticism on the site because he did the Eagles playing in Brazil post, but he put Christ the Redeemer on the header image, and we were told that Christ the Redeemer is in Rio, not Sao Paulo.
Well, they do. Like, my girlfriend's in Portugal. She actually landed this morning.
Wow.
And they have a Christ the Redeemer there as well. Like, she sent me the picture. Okay. I don't know the IPA situation in Brazil, though. I can tell you that.
Hopefully it's non-existent. There's like a little bit here. I mean, like, I think most people know that I can't stand IPA. I would rather drink bleach than IPA at this point. Mike Gill, a craft beer connoisseur, anybody who went to Morgantown, of course, is, even though we didn't have amazing beer to drink when we were in school there, we drank Lion's Head and Yingling and whatever other trash.
Rolling Rock, too.
Milwaukee. No, Rolling Rock would have been like an upper class beer.
Oh, that's Muskingum University. I apologize. That was Rolling. That was us.
So like my running bit. Yes. My April Fool's joke the other day was that I'm starting a new, my personal news. In addition to Running Crossing Broad, I'm launching a new craft beer newsletter. IPA All Day is a celebration of the hoppiest, haziest, best tasting stuff. This side of the Mississippi, I'm really excited to get started. It's IPA All Day, every day. I always get somebody really good with it every year. I think this year I got Mark Zumoff to retweet it. A couple years ago, I got Serena Winters badly because she didn't know that I could not stand Imagine Dragons. Imagine Dragons is like my least favorite band of all time. And I said that I was leaving Crossing Broad to be like their publicist for like Interscope Records or something like that. And she was devastated. She was like, I was so happy for you. You know, I was like genuinely excited for you. I said, no, I actually hate Imagine Dragon just as much as I hate IPA. Because, Mike Gill, when I drink IPA, I don't taste anything. You know what I taste? I taste hops. I taste
anything. We all have different taste buds, man. We all have different taste buds. Now, you know, my birthday was in January, and we traveled and did a whole brewery tour, like in just like the whole weekend, hit like a bunch of different spots. I've done the whole, if you go to Cape May, you can do start at the top of Cape May County and go all the way to the bottom. There's like 8 different breweries that you can hit. So you can like make days out of it. It's like a day out now. And Hamilton, over in Hamilton, there's like a little triangle they have
of
3 places that are really good.
What's your top? Give me your top three. Mike Gill's top three South Jersey breweries as of April 4th, 2024.
Oh, man. So I like Gusto, which is down all the way, way down in North Cape May, across the street from the ferry. So if you're going to the ferry, it's down there. Gusto. Ludlum is very good, but they're closed right now. They're opening up like one of those, because you know in Jersey you can't serve food at the breweries, which is a big
controversy for many years. Yeah.
That's stupid.
But if you have a wall between the bar and the restaurant, you are considered a brew pub and you can serve food. So Ludlum is turning into a brew pub. But I like the old Ludlum. It was a really tiny, like 4-stool tasting place. Their beer is called Water Guns and Rainbows. You would like that, Kevin Kincaid.
Water Guns and Rainbows. Okay. All right.
Guns and Rainbows. So Ludlum, when they reopen, I'm looking forward to that. I like 3-3s out in Hamilton is another good spot. It's one of the three out in Hamilton. So that's a little like probably out of the viewers who hit the Wildwood area. Wildwood has Anglesey and Mudhen, two good spots.
Yeah, there's a couple spots right along Route 9 down there too. Bucket Brigade. I like them. Yeah, my wife and I, our favorite brewery in South Jersey is Hidden Sands.
It's right around the corner from my house.
Right around the corner from you, and from 97.3. It's like underneath, it's kind of like where the parkway and the AC expressway kind of like intersect there. I'm having trouble describing it like off the top of my head.
It is in a weird spot, but it's a it's a really cool tasting. The upstairs is neat.
I just don't like, so here's my thing on IPA real quick. I know that everybody's got different tastes, and people say to me, there's different kinds of IPA. Like you got a West Coast IPA, it tastes like a pine cone, right? Somebody put a pine cone into a vat and added liquid to it, right?
Not a big West Coast.
I'm not a fan of those, by the way.
No, because they're very like earthy and very. So a lot of people say to me, they're like, "Well, have you tried hazies? Do you like New England IPAs? Do you like the milkshake kinds that maybe you get at like a Tired Hands or something like that?" Those are my wife's favorites. She used to come home with like Tired Hands and whatever and bring them home. I do, but I still don't feel. I feel like so. Say you put like a like citrus or some kind of flavor in it. I still feel like it's overpowered because of the hops. And so I'm thinking like, well, you can put all of that stuff, you can put all that flavor into a beer, but it doesn't have to be an IPA. And then I'm getting more of the flavor of it. You know what I'm saying? I just feel like I can't get away from the hop taste and the hop feeling where every time I drink IPA, I just feel like I'm just being overpowered with it. I don't know. Does that make sense the way I explain it?
Well, you like more of like a pale ale.
Yes. Yeah. I would drink a New England. Yeah, sure. Sure. And like you know, there's a variety now. So you have like sessionable IPA where if we go to like a brewery or something, Mike, and it's like, you know, you want to try like 8 of the 10 that they have on the menu. Sure. I'll drink like a small one or at least try it, but I'm not going to go buy a case.
By the way. So have you been to the Seed in Atlantic City?
No.
All right. The Seed is where the Seed is outstanding. Very good. So I do a segment on Fridays. The whole show is branded Happy Hour Friday, right?
Yeah.
So people text in all day different beers to try, and I announce the beers and where you can go get them. So we have a little beer community, Kevin. And The Seed was like on the list. I had not been there. It's way in the inlet down by Ocean Casino. So I went there one day. It's the first time I had gotten to the place. And I walked up and I ordered, and I'm looking at the menu. They didn't have one hazy IPA, which is like my beer. Yeah. So I ordered the beer, and the guy behind the register looked at me, and he said, "I'm sorry, man." There you go, the Seed.
Yeah, Craig's on it today, man. Craig is on fire. I know it's going to be a good Craig day.
So the guy looked at me, he said, "I'm so sorry, man." And I was like, "What?" He's like, "I know who you are, and we don't have a beer for you here right now." Like, they knew that I drank New England IPA, so the guy went to the vat in the back. He was making one at that time and literally poured me one at that right there on the spot. I was the first taster of their new beer. But that place, they are legit. That I forgot about that because they are way off on their own little thing, the Seed in Atlantic City. They have no TVs. Like, you're not going there to watch the game. You are there to drink the beer.
Well, maybe instead of my April Fool's beer newsletter, maybe I'll have to do a spinoff podcast here because I feel like I could talk about this forever. Begrudgingly, I think we have to get it back to sports here at some point.
Let's get it back to the Sixers and Heat.
Yeah, the program director's knocking down my door right now. I think, I think we got to start with the Phillies, you know, because last week they had not started yet. They were rained out, and we have not talked about the Phillies on this program as of yet. They're 2-4. They're not amazing. I guess the lazy take, Mike, would be to say, like, well, it's a long year. They've only six games in. It's April. But there would be no point of doing a show, and we could all just log off right now. So I think what I come back around to is a lot of the stuff that we're talking about now is a continuation of what we were talking about at the end of last year. Can Johan Rojas hit the ball out of the infield? You know, are they still swinging its sliders away, right? Is Kyle Schwarber a leadoff guy? You know, I don't feel like any of the, you know, is the bullpen gonna be anything this year? So I don't know. I
mean,
like
holding them back.
Yeah. So, I mean, after six games, Mike, what's top of your mind with the Phillies right now?
So the three things that I think are the biggest. Number one, yesterday I'm the Castellanos thing. You just got to start wondering about. Like, is he completely figured out? He strikes out the same way every single time. He's 0-2 before he steps in the box. So at what point do the Phillies have to start saying, "Look, against right-handed pitching, we're going to put Marsh in right field because everybody wants Marsh more time. That's a way to get him even more time. If you want Merrifield to play more, fine. He can play left field." But Marsh is going to play right field because Castellanos is an out. He is an out every time. And 2 years ago, he wasn't very good. Last year, he was good for half the season. And then he got smoking hot in that playoff series and then was completely nothing against Arizona. But I feel like he's more the guy. If you even get the guy from 2 years ago, I think you're lucky. I think he's like 220, like 15 homer kind of. Like, he has that look right now. So that's a definite conversation of, with that salary, Do the Phillies dare think about platooning him, or is he just a rite of passage in the lineup every single
day? Would you trade him? I don't
think that's one that people are thinking about right now. So that's one.
What are you saying, Trevor? I thought you sounded like you'd think,
would you start throwing out the feelers to trade Castellanos? Because he hasn't been the same since he got his money in Cincinnati or Philadelphia. That's how I feel. Would you throw it out? Would you think about it?
Yeah, sure. If anybody wants to call me, but hey, you want a lousy contract for a guy who can't hit? No, I think that's the answer.
Do it in Miami. They're 0-7 out the gate right now.
Well, I don't think that Miami wants to pay anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's never too early. It's never early. It's never too early to trade somebody in Philly sports, you know. But I don't. You look for patterns of like what makes you think that anything's going to be different this time around, you know. And like I think the thing that bugs me probably more than any of this is like the Rojas thing, because I know they say that because he is intrinsically linked to the Kyle Schwarber thing. So really, I think those two are the same discussion, right? And they will tell you that Kyle Schwarber only leads off once per game. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, there's never anybody in front of him later in the game that's getting on base and that's doing anything. So you have presented yourself kind of a twofold problem here. To the point where, like, I get it, you know, guys need at-bats. They need to work through these things. But are we providing on-the-job training for these guys at the major league level? I mean, how much, like where do you – I don't know, like, where do you draw the line with that?
So I like Rojas. It's funny because I was in Clearwater and my buddy and I, my two other buddies were just like tired because people wanted to hit for Rojas in that playoff series last year. And I said, with who? What are you going to hit? Christian Pache? Like, people hate Pache. And then all of a sudden they wanted to use Pache to hit for Rojas. And I said, listen, your point is right though, Kevin. If Rojas can't get on base, now you're a problem. Last year, people forget, in the regular season, he had a 342 on base percentage. He hit 300. This guy came out of nowhere. Right now, he can't hit the ball out of the infield, though. And in the playoffs, he struggled. And now that's carrying over. So 342, great. I like Rojas. I can say that he is struggling majorly. And your point is right. This isn't one of these situations. Remember, they have like these Rule 5 guys, and you're trying to sneak them through. And you're like, you're playing a Rule 5 guy just so you don't have to give them back to the other team. You don't have to do that with Rojas. He has options. You can send him back. So it almost feels like they're stubbornly trying to sneak him through because defensively he's so good. But realistically, defensively, Pache, it's not like he sucks. He's very good. And now, not that Pache's a great hitter, that you want him hitting every day. There's your issue. So do you just want to say, Marsh, you're in center, Merrifield, you're in left, Pache, you'll give guys days off? Or do you just want to turn this over to Pache? But I agree that if Rojas can't give you anything, and look, this lineup is predicated on, you shouldn't be complaining about the 9-hole hitter, right? No. That's part of the problem that the rest of the team is having. Because my number two issue here is, and I said this last year, Trey Turner is not a $300 million player. Never one. If you put his best seasons and took his batting average, his on base, his home runs, his RBIs, and put them all together, never is he a $300 million player. I'm not sure he's a $100 million player. And if he's not that level of player, that's a lot of money to have tied up in a guy who's good, but not a franchise difference maker. So those things stand out more than Rojas, but Rojas becomes the issue because it's so glaring.
Yeah, so Bob Wankel for Crossing Broad this morning, he said Johan Rojas' problem was the subheader in the story that he wrote. It's been a rough ride for Johan Rojas. He's 1-for-15, 0.067 batting average. Then he drops in a tweet from Anthony Sanfilippo that says, Johan Rojas has had 17 plate appearances so far this season. He still hasn't hit a ball past the infield. I guess he got on base last night with an infield single.
He did. That was his first hit.
Yeah. Some things to consider. This is Bob. I'm still reading Bob here. The Phillies are weakening the impact of Kyle Schwarber's bat. As they have said repeatedly, they like Schwarber batting leadoff because he can change the game early with one swing. Another thing you hear is that he only truly bats leadoff once per game. Fair enough. Schwarber has looked more athletic and comfortable early on, and in time, his power and on-base skills could work well in a Schwarber-Turner-Harper trio that gets rolling consistently. But what comes before Schwarber? He's the Phillies' biggest power threat, and with Rojas supplying a total zero ahead of him, it significantly diminishes the impact of the damage he can inflict, which is, you know, I feel like this is a paragraph that he wrote last year, and maybe something that he wrote the year before, not involving Rojas, but involving Schwarber. And so that's what I look for early in the season. It's like, there's no discussion to be had about guys getting hot and guys warming up and figuring it out and starting to hit. Like, we know Bryce Harper's going to start to hit. We know most of these dudes are going to start to hit. But you look for things that are, you know, that pop out to you early and say, okay, what is a legitimate concern in April versus what is not a legitimate concern? In my mind, too, the errors, the base running stuff, you know, getting picked off. I mean, that's like fundamental stuff where it's like, that's not a, like, these guys are going to figure it out and just get, you know, get better in May. That's like, why is this still happening? You know, is that your number three?
One of the questions that I had entering this season is, okay, you ran it back. You stayed with the same group of guys,
which I honestly hated.
Which guy? Nobody had like a career year last year. Nobody was like, wow, this guy blew up. And I mean, Schwarber had 47 homers, but he hit 197. His on-base percentage was pretty good. So he had a really, really good year, but no one had a year that was memorable. So which guy is going to have a better year than they had last year? And which of those guys are either going to stay the same or go backwards now? I think Castellanos is a backwards guy. Real Muto, to me, you got to start worrying. Like, he's getting older. He's caught a lot of games. Like the other night, it's 11-4 you're losing. Why is he catching in that game? When you start the games getting out of your hand, you get him out from behind the plate. The guy's caught so much. Last year, he's 252 with 20 homers. He's not getting paid. His salary is not commiserate to 252 with 20 homers. For what he gets paid, he needs to be producing more than that. I don't like him in the four hole. I don't like the lineup at all, the way that they have done this right now. But I don't know which guy on this team you can literally say, that guy's going to have a better year this year than he had last year. But I can pick out some guys that I think are going to be worse. And if they're worse, you got a problem.
You know what the most read story, the most read Phillies story, I should say, on the site has been over the last month plus? It has been anything to do with the replacement of the out-of-town scoreboard in right field. Have you talked about it on the Sports Bash? Has it come up at all?
Yeah, in fact, we do a segment each day with one of our producers, Nick Earnshaw, and he brought it up to me about the new scoreboard and the fact that it's out. And then last night, Thompson saying that Castellanos is having problems. I feel like every ball is a magnet for that scoreboard the last, like, three games. I feel like he keeps going back and keeps – that picture right there has happened almost every single night that he's looking at that wall, the ball's bouncing off the thing. It is pretty funny, though, that it did come up.
It just like, you know, even when we did, I think the first story was just they're replacing it and they're putting an electronic thing back there. Like 20,000 people clicked on that. I was like, oh, shit. OK, I guess people. Mm-hmm. Well, OK, yeah, it's Philadelphia sports and it's change. Of course, people are going to respond to it a certain way. Right. I mean, we don't like change. But then, Craig, if you can pull up that other one about the advertising.
Where is the out-of-town scoreboard now these days anyways? That's what I look to for us gamblers out there.
It doesn't really exist. You know, I mean, like they, you know, people, one of the complaints that people had right off the bat was that it was going to be like, oh, they're just going to stuff ads on there. Of course. I mean, we knew that was going to happen, but you get out of town scores. Everybody's on their phone. I mean, when they built Citizens Bank Park, you know, 20 years ago, whatever, I don't think a lot of, you know, that's where you got your scores, right? I mean, people weren't sitting there on their iPhone. So this picture was put on Reddit from user JKane123, and they have stuffed Mike Gill 7 ads on there. So left to right, for people who are listening on the podcast, we're looking at a shot of the new out-of-town electronic board. I'm not even going to call it a scoreboard. It's just another electronic panel. Left to right, Hatfield, Temple Health, Nemours, Rothman, Chick-fil-A, Hers, and Waste Management. And in the middle there, you see, I guess it's Wilson from the Reds against Brandon Marsh. It's like a statistical comparison or whatever. I don't know. To me, it's funny because, Craig, if you scroll down a little bit,
it's like a hockey rink.
I know it's like a hockey rink. It looks like it's just like overkill. Now somebody else posted on Reddit, okay, well, here's Connie Mack Stadium back in 1960, which has 5 advertisements on it as well. Here's Taylor Pork Roll. There's a bank loan company. There's the Yellow Pages, the Ballantine Beer. And there's like a watch company on the top there. So point being, Mike, like, okay, advertising in baseball stadiums on scoreboards is not anything new, but I think you get to a point where it's like, where does it stop? Or like, how much is too much? Like the Phillies, we know we're going to have the patch on their arm.
My question with this kind of stuff is always, is the juice worth the squeeze? What are they making off that scoreboard at? What are they paying for that? Like, if you're paying, do you think they're paying over $1 million to have that ad placement? And even that, like, is $1 million in the grand scheme of things that big for the baseball team that they have to clutter? Now, you would say, well, they got seven of them. That's $7 million. Even like you might say, that's paying Whit Merrifield, essentially. He's making $8 million a year. What are they making for those ads, though? Like $250,000, $1 million, $2 million. What do they make for those ads? Like, that's what I can't figure out. Why is it worth it for the team to put the patch? What are they getting paid for the patch? So the team might say, for whatever we're making on this, do we really need Kroger? The other night, Kroger is on the jersey for the Reds. I mean, I went to Kroger in West Virginia and got a 4x4 sandwich. Like, they really are advertising. You're the grocery store. Who's not going there if it's in your town?
Yeah.
Spend. Or Quick Trip for the Royals. That's the other good one out these days.
Oklahoma City's jerseys the other night in the NBA. I don't even know what it is, but they got orange jerseys with a big yellow patch. What is the ad, dude? It's like, what are you doing?
It's just a slippery slope, man. And the simple counterpoint is like, people will say you can put advertising everywhere if it gets the Phillies payroll to number one and they win the World Series, right? If they get enough money, if that makes enough money, if tattooing the Pennsylvania lottery on my forehead made the Phillies enough money that they could win a World Series, then let's go get it done right now. You know, I think there's certain people who feel that, but you're just like being obliterated with it to the point of like, you know, the Atlanta Braves had like the Quick Creep thing, the yellow, ugly yellow patch on the arm. And like, you know, Mike, I come from the soccer world where jersey advertising is everywhere. And like, to this day, I have not bought and will never buy a Philadelphia Union jersey as long as it's got Bimbo on the front of it. And I'm not a Bimbo hater. Bimbo, like, Bimbo is a continental company, but their North American headquarters is in Horsham, so I've got no problem with Bimbo or anything like that. But I don't want to buy it. I'm not a billboard. Like, I want the team logo and like the name and the number, and that's it. Like, to me, it gets tacky, man. It's just like how far are you going to like go down the thing with it? You're going to look like a NASCAR driver, and you're just going to be covered with like that, you know?
So I was up in Syracuse a couple of years ago, and it used to be the Carrier Dome. Well, they got a new name. The next person that follows Carrier, you're screwed, right? Like Heinz Field in Pittsburgh.
It's still Heinz Field, yeah.
Insurance company that comes in there, you've now backfired because people still call it Heinz Field. They don't even know what you are, and now you're spending money and nobody knows who you are. I don't even know the Carrier Dome, and maybe people don't even know that Carrier was an air conditioning company, but that was the name of the building, the Carrier Dome. I don't know what it is now, but you're not getting your bang for your buck on those.
Do you even know what the Miami Arena is now, Mike Gill?
It was the crypto thing, right?
It was. What is it now?
FTX it was, because I was there. I don't know what it is now.
It's Kaseya Center now. It's a human resources
place. There was a time where you, like, you know, when you were, like, geeking out little kid, you could name, like, every goalie in the league. But you could name every name of the building, right? It was like you could go to every city in the country and know the name of the arena where the teams played. The other night, you know, I didn't even think about this the other night because I said, who had the biggest return to Philadelphia on Tuesday? Was it Embiid or was it Harper? And someone said, well, Harper wasn't in Philly. I said, yeah, he was. They played at Citizens Bank. And then across the street, you're at Wells Fargo. Like, you have two competing banks across the street from each other. Lincoln Financial on the other corner. I mean, I just wonder, like, what's the return on investment on these naming rights? I guess they're doing all right because I'll give them credit because Wells Fargo was First Union and Core States, and it kept changing. But the other two stayed the same the entire time.
Yeah, there's been some continuity here. Let me bring Russ on. Russ is finally back from his meeting, so now we got the four boxes going. I don't know. I don't I feel like an old like complaining boomer or something, but part of me thinks that there's a line to be drawn with it. Where it's like you can put ads all over the place. I hate them on the jerseys, man, because it just like cheapens the shit. You know, some great MLS jerseys where it says like Herbalife on the front of it. Like, like come on, man. I don't know.
That's a pyramid scheme right there. Helmets? Did they have the IBX on their helmets, the Flyers?
Yeah. No, there was UTS or ATS, one of the technology companies, like the first one of the years they did. It was like a technology company. It was in the corner now for the sponsor. Now it's off.
The other thing that's been bothering people, I did a hypothetical kind of on the site about this because we love a good hypothetical in sports media. Craig, if you got the banner thing, you can pull it up. So they raised a banner for the 2023 Phillies season in which they had a wild card berth. But they went to the NLCS, and they're one game away from the World Series. It's kind of hard to see in the photo here. It's like a blue flag that's kind of off to the right of where the division flags are. I can see Russ shaking his head already, and I know his thought on this. You know, people think it's a loser flag because they didn't win anything. They didn't win the division. They didn't win the World Series. They didn't win the pennant. Here it is here. You can kind of see it for people on video. It's above the CP Rankin rooftop of Ashburn Alley. It's the powder blue 2023 there. And so just gauging like feedback, it seemed like a majority of Phillies fans thought that this was just stupid. Like, why are you flying a banner for a wild card berth? You know, yeah. To the left you can see the pennant in 2022, the division in 2011, for example. I kind of like, you know, put the side by side here if you want to scroll down, Craig, there for me. Because you can kind of make an art, if you're going to make any kind of counterpoint at all, you can say, all right, which team is more, scroll up to that middle bullet part there, Craig. Yeah, hold it right there. Yeah. So you could say, I think this is a legitimate question. Some people laughed when I brought this up, but I said, which season is more worthy of celebrating? 2011, 102 wins, 60 losses. They won the NL East, but they didn't win a damn playoff series. They lost 3-2 to the Cardinals in the NLDS versus 2023, where they had 90 wins and 72 losses. They finished second in the NL East, but they beat the Marlins and the Braves in the playoffs, and they went to game 7 of the NLCS. So I thought it was a good hypothetical. I don't know. Mike, you tell me.
This is good flag research on what – like, I didn't even see that the Phillies did this at first. And it feels like Tropicana Field is just, like, littered with these. They've got them all. The Rays never win the division. They're always, like, they're coming in with a wild card. And they had one, too. And I thought to myself, do you really get a flag for the wild card now? Like, you know, because now there's, like, a third wild card. Like we're and the thing that gets me about the flag is now they're using the alternate colors for the flag because they're like, we don't even have colors to use this flag. So we're going to use our colors from the 80 team. You know, are they going to use the City Connect next? Like that bogus thing. The City Connect pisses me off more than anything.
No, I love it. I love the color. Give me something different. Yeah, just no advertising on it.
I am out on every City Connect in every sport. Whatever you're giving me, I am out on 100%. So the City Connect's going to get unveiled tomorrow. Is that the next flag that comes? Is that going to be like the Pennsylvania state flag?
It's with a yellow. It's a neon yellow they're going to use it for.
I'm out. So I hate the flag thing for the wild card.
It's interesting to me because I don't think that – I mean, I guess winning the division used to mean more on the old schedule when you played the Braves 15 times a year and you played the Mets or whatever. But even to me, the pennant has kind of lost some of its luster with interleague play. You know, I think that's kind of watered down. And I think you saw that last year when the Phillies had the ring ceremony and it was like, okay, traditionally, yeah, to say that you had won the pennant, you had won your respective league, that meant something because you're only specifically playing those teams. But I think that's kind of got watered down, you know, a little bit over time. There was some guy in the comments I was trying to find. He was complaining about some Asplund sign on the left side in the flower bed. Did they add
it's a neon orange thing above it.
Yeah, that thing came out of nowhere now, too. Although, by the way, speaking of these banners, the best banners when you're at the Flyers game and you look up and they still have like the old names, the Patrick Division.
Yes.
Like those kind of things. That's when you earned something back at that point. You got like that's what the flag is for. Earning a goal. The goal is to win something, not just slip in. So that's where the flag for me get. I know earning a playoff berth, but when you
get the President's Trophy banner, those are the worst.
Spring training goal is to win first. It's win your division, win your conference. Those are the goals. That's what you get flags for. The Asplundus sign is ridiculous, by the way. It's the entire length of the flower bed. Goes,
yeah, I know. I know. It's a little bit overkill. All right. Last topic, Mike. I want to make sure we get this topic in before I let you go. So I'm going to kind of jump around here in the rundown. You called women's basketball West Virginia. The Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese thing, LSU, Iowa did 12.3 million viewers on Monday night, the most watched women's basketball game, I think, ever. Do I have that right? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, right? I watched a little bit of it because the Flyers were on at the same time. I've been on a big Flyers kick, and Ivan Fedotov, not Fedotov. Apparently, I've been saying it wrong for months now. Ivan Fedotov made his debut. So I was focused on that. The Phillies were playing. I flipped over and watched part of the second half. Here's my take on all this. People always want to make this some big referendum on, like, the future of women's sports, or say that, you know, we've made it, or this has made it, or that, and make some big, you know, huge thing about it. I think people will tune in to watch stars and storylines, and that was a compelling game. You had two of the biggest stars in the sport, a controversial coach who's always making headlines, and so there was something compelling about it. Is that an oversimplification on my part?
You know, I'm interested. They were talking on the national show on ESPN Radio the other day about it. I had Evan Cohen, who does the national show, on with me.
Hell yeah.
He had a topic that they ended up using from our conversation on the morning show yesterday, which was, has Caitlin Clark, will she end up doing more for women's college basketball or the WNBA? Like, do we think the WNBA is going to grow and be something? I bring up, you mentioned I called games at West Virginia. I called a game one time. UConn beat West Virginia 100-28. It was the disparity in the talent at that time was so great and ridiculous that the game could not grow because it was just like three or four teams just squashing everybody. You know, it's like a WWE squash match with like Typhoon sitting on Bob Jones, who happened to be down at the local Y. Yeah. But now you get upsets. You have that. But I don't know. I'm very conflicted if this is her and she's going to bring them to the WNBA and that's going to grow, or people going to stick with this after she's gone, or is she just such a once in a generational type of, I got to see what this is all about. And once she's gone, I'm out. So I do think it's a very interesting 12 million. That's a ton of viewers. They're going to outdraw the men, by the way, this weekend, because they're on ABC at 3 o'clock on Sunday. And the men are playing 9:30 on TBS on Monday night. The men are going to get squashed, I think, by that game. So the problem I have with her moving to the WNBA is when they play, you're playing games in the summer, in the middle of the afternoon. I just don't know that that's a sustainable model that's going to grow that game to where we're hearing about the ratings and it's a money growing industry. I'm very intrigued. I definitely think it's a very intriguing conversation because I think we all have talked to guys that you're like, hey, did you watch that game last night? You're like, you can't believe that they actually brought it up, that they watched that game. And a lot of people I know watch that game.
It's interesting. It's good for the sport. I like that angle on it. Yeah, what does it do? Is there continuity in it? Does it mean something for the WNBA? And is it like a foothold that they can build off of, for sure? You know, we shall see. Mike Gill from 97.3 ESPN Sports Bash, 2 to 6. Monday to Friday. You're a great Mountaineer, my friend. Thank you for coming on. Appreciate it, as always.
It's great to see all three of you. Russ, I wish we had more chance to talk. I enjoy your work.
We do what we can. Thank you, Mike. That's very kind of you.
Next time. We'll get Russ on a full show one of these days when he doesn't have an important financial meeting.
Somebody here have an IPA for me, all right?
We will. We will.
Make sure I'll grab you one from South Florida.
You know how much Kinker loves the IPA.
I'll pour one right now.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Hey, Kevin, I have a problem.
What's your problem?
If it's with you. I don't know if it's with Craig. It's probably you. Do you know why the number that we were seeing in the top left corner was a little bit smaller than normal?
Why is that?
Because whichever jackass set up the StreamYard today used the Snow the Goalie account instead of the Crossing Broad account. Oh. So this show, for the first 40 minutes, was streaming on Snow the Goalie's Twitter and not Crossing Broad. Don't worry. Don't worry. Russ Joy went in. He removed the Snow the Goalie account and now put it up on the Crossing Broad Twitter because Russ is a man of the people and of Crossing Broad.
I like how Russ I like how Russ always acts like he's the only one in the company who has anything important to do. Like, I just sit here on my ass all morning and do nothing. I'm running a site editing Pagan's typos, you know, stuff like that. So, but thank you. I fix it.
Well, let's be real. Snow the Goalie, the only Flyers podcast, has a very nice presence on Twitter.
Yeah, but it's not
the 108,000 or whatever it is on Twitter on Crossing Broad. So, let's put it out there.
Yeah.
Make sure it does work good, you know?
Yeah, the number was a little low. Craig said something in the private chat, and I was like, I don't fucking know, but now I do know. So anyway.
I figured. Don't worry, I'm here. I'm here for you. Don't worry.
At least we're getting a better rating than Gargano is just right now.
Let's quash that.
There was a time that Crossing Broad would talk about those things. Crossing Broadcast on Monday had a very objective analysis of it. Kevin does not like to go into those. I did.
I apologize.
Really quick, Johnny Marks was on this morning with Gargano, though. It was a 97.5 first morning show reunion, right? It was Gargano, it was Marks, and Jamie Lynch.
Oh, John was with Cuz for a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, little thing here. I have a feeling that we might be seeing more of that, but who's to say?
We can talk a little bit about the Apodi stuff later, and that'll scratch the itch here, you know, because I feel like I'm ready to talk about that now on the show. Rico says, I have zero cares about Jamie Apodi, but I read each of these articles. You know, I got an email like that, or like a DM about that. Somebody said, like, I don't give a shit one way or another about this person or about the news, but like, I'm hooked now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like I'm writing like a continuing novel or something here. Like, here's my latest chapter of what I've not been able to find out, you know?
I hope you get a Pulitzer Prize for it, honestly.
If I didn't get the Pulitzer Prize for the story about the Facebook comments about the Facebook community groups, then the Pulitzer is probably never never going to happen. By the way, I think we've accidentally pulled in some Snow the Goalie listeners here too, because I'm seeing some names in the chat that I don't recognize here. So
Joe Papel gets it. He's a great man. Joe Papel's a great
Russ,
man.
There's a hater who hates me in your chat, by the way, for Snow the Goalie, by the way. One of your people who loves you guys, he hates my guts. He calls me a troll and stuff, actually.
Well, listen, you can't get yourself caught up in that, all right? Sections are comment sections.
So I know, but I think it's truly hilarious.
We're all about uplifting everyone here at Crossing Broad. So
where do we want to go from here? What's on your mind, Russ?
Russ, are you actually interested in this the Heat Sixer game? I'll throw it out there for you. Are you interested or are you not going to watch?
No, although Joel being back and looking how he did the other night makes me think, I mean, they still would have no chance in a series against Boston. But I said this on Monday. I love the idea of getting that sixth seed and playing Cleveland in the first round for two reasons. One, I think you could beat the shit out of Cleveland. Two, if everything else goes the way that it should, then you would play Milwaukee in the second round. And I think that they have a better chance against Milwaukee than they do Boston. So, and I don't think anybody's going to upset Boston. I think Boston is very much going to run roughshod on the Eastern Conference and make their way to the finals, where they will choke because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are frauds. Yeah. But I like the idea of getting the sixth seed, taking Cleveland down, and Embiid is Embiid. If we get him at 80% by the time the playoffs roll around, you're in good shape. You can win a first round series. Ford being a negative, but like they could maybe get themselves back into this thing a little bit, and then you're playing against a Glenn Rivers led team, and Glenn's out making more excuses, more and more and more excuses. I think he's blaming the protein shake people now for not having that dog in them on the road. So that's. Yeah. That's certainly something.
Ford is sincere, by the way, Russ. He's
Ford wants the Heat. I'll say that.
Spamming the chat saying that there's no way that the Sixers get the sixth seed, that they're getting
Ford. Ford, with all due respect, and we live relatively close together, and Ford's been trying to meet up with me for a cheesesteak. You're not helping your case at getting together for a cheesesteak when you spam the chat with this shit, okay? Listen, very clearly, if you look at the standings, I get that the schedule down the stretch isn't ideal for the Sixers. But if you have the MVP back in the lineup, and you have Tyrese Maxey back in the lineup, and you have Tobias Harris looking slightly less like an absolute piece of regurgitated dog food in the lineup, you're within striking distance. The Heat only have one more win. Like, tonight could very much dictate in some way who gets that sixth seed. So is tonight a must win, 6-1-0-6-3-2? But, like, yeah, realistically, they're within striking distance of that sixth seed. And, like,
plus,
you let the chips
Miami
all where they
Indiana
make.
Indiana on Monday, on Sunday night anyways.
Yeah, like, you have to win. You have to, like, you're going to have to beat good teams at some point. I mean, like, I admittedly have not done a side-by-side comparison of, like, where the Heat, the Pacers, and the Sixers schedules are heading. But, like,
I can give you the Heat schedule. I mean, off well, the top I, my I
have,
right now.
You have the Heat? All right, go. Give me the Heat, and I'll give you the Sixers.
Sixers tonight. Houston tomorrow night. Sunday at 5, they have the Indiana Pacers. Tuesday night, Atlanta. Wednesday night, they have the Dallas Mavericks on off of back-to-back. Friday night at Toronto, home for Toronto. Sunday at 1 o'clock at home for Toronto.
They have some tough games. Then look at the Sixers' schedule. They're at Miami tonight, at Memphis, who suck,
mm-hmm,
at the Spurs, who suck,
mm-hmm,
home against the Pistons, who suck, at home against the Magic, who can do some things.
They're interesting.
At home against the Nets, who largely suck. So Ford is acting like the Sixers are about to go on a gauntlet like the Flyers just got out of. Mm-hmm. And that's simply not the case. So if you have six games left on the schedule, I will say that, like, the winner of tonight's game is really in the driver's seat for that sixth seed. But if you're being realistic about it, there's no reason that the Sixers couldn't win 4 of 6 down the stretch. I think it's entirely reasonable. And based on what you just said, Miami has.
Yeah.
Miami could go 3-3. And then you look at it and you say, all right, you're within a game. I don't know what the head-to-head record is between the Sixers and Heat this year. But again, that's why this game tonight is so big. So, you know, there we are. Like, there's a very – you don't even have to, like, try to twist yourself into a pretzel logically to try to get the Sixers to the sixth seed. So, I don't know. I think that as long as Embiid is back and at, like, a decent percentage of what he normally is, they should be able to win 4 of these 6.
The only thing that I need, that I absolutely have to see, is the Sixers versus the Bucks at some point in the playoffs. I think you want it, I want it, we all want it, right?
Yeah.
Which brings us to the next part of the show. We're going to do a group exercise here. The chat can participate. We're going to come up with a running list of every excuse that Doc Rivers has made this year for the performance of his team. I'll start you off here. The schedule, the altitude,
mm-hmm,
a travel crew,
mm-hmm,
equipment manager.
That's a new one.
Pollen allergies, I'm sure, he's probably thinking that.
There's pollen in Milwaukee? I didn't know that.
The weather.
That's a Miami take.
The ball boy didn't put enough air in the ball. The PSI was not high enough in there.
I've heard that beer has gotten considerably worse. It's no longer Milwaukee's best. It's Milwaukee's okay.
Milwaukee's worse. We drank it in college. It was terrible.
Or Beast Ice. Beast Ice.
Oh, Beast. All right, anyway.
Laundry team used the wrong detergent. That's why Giannis didn't shoot well the other night.
The wrong Gatorade or Buyer Steel.
Still adjusting to the new out-of-town scoreboard in right field.
Fair. Very fair.
It's never anybody's, you know, it's never his fault, right? You know,
no.
You know, I hear him talking the other night about, like, the travel crew. We all need to be more professional when we go on there. What the fuck are you talking about, man? You mean the travel crew? Like,
it's hard.
Giannis's suitcase was put outside of his hotel room and not on, like, the little thing in front of the bed. I just
not really understand traveling.
Yeah. I don't know. He took over when they were like 30-13. Mm-hmm. I think they've played like 500 or just barely above 500 since he took over. Look, man, you guys know how I am, man. I'm going into the playoffs with an open mind. I don't have any expectations. They were playing. I think the thing that people forget, the one take that I think is fugazi, is to say that the Sixers team was not any good or didn't have it. I mean, they're playing really damn good basketball before Embiid went out, mm-hmm, and he was playing better than he was last year. If they get 75% of that guy, it might be different. And, like, you got Nick Nurse in there too, coaching the playoffs. So I'm looking at it with an open mind. I've been out on this team for the last 2 months just because it's not worth watching them really without Embiid. And I dedicated most of my time to the Flyers, and we did more on the show on the Flyers, but I'll jump back on board. We've all earned the right.
They're the team. Listen, they're a team that's entirely optimized around Joel Embiid. So without him, of course, it doesn't work. Yeah. He's also your best player. He's not your number two. It's not like you're losing Tobias Harris, who's your number 10. But like,
and we're like 11.
I mean, if we're being honest here, like, look, none of us are Investor Jeff. All right, Investor Jeff is the guy who each and every time the Sixers season rolls around, he says, all right, this is my last time. This is the last time I'm going to believe in them. By midseason, he's ready to hang himself. Not actually. So
no, by mid-game, by the middle of the first game,
He's at that point, he's ready to hang his laundry, we'll say. Okay, we're going to be careful here with the YouTube, all right? But then by the end of the season, he's all in. He's totally invested. He's on an absolute roller coaster. And then he gets to the end of the season, and he's like, I'm never gonna watch this team again. I'm never gonna let them hurt me again. And this is what I saw the other night. And Craig and I have now neuro-linked together. Craig, because of Monday's show now, knows exactly where I want to go. I don't even have to say it. I don't even have to look at his beautiful. By the way, Craig has a fresh cut. You can't see him because he's not on the screen. It looks like a goddamn stud. All right, anyway.
You've got a symbiotic relationship going with him here.
Love
Craig,
to see it.
Craig pulls this up from Investor Jeff a few nights ago. I want you to put the word that we back up, and it's a picture of Embiid, who, by the way, if we're being honest, as you're scrolling, a little bit of Chris Bosh. There's a little bit of Chris Bosh from the side profile with the cornrows. I legit was like, hold on a second. What are we doing here? But yeah, Joel Embiid. So Investor Jeff's ready to get hurt again, and hurt again he will be. But, you know, I feel much more positive about the Sixers now than I did a few weeks ago. I didn't think Embiid was going to get back this early. I thought it was going to be like a game or two to go, and then it was going to fall apart in the playoffs. But like, I don't know. Can he get his conditioning to where it needs to be? Again, Cleveland's not a good team. Gets the sixth seed, and anything is possible.
As the great Kevin Garnett once said after winning a championship with the Boston Celtics.
Well,
that's my kinker.
I think the only legitimate concern. Here's more.
See, a Nets.
He's back in, man. He's back in. You know, one of these days, too, we're gonna have to get Investor Jeff back on the show and have him explain why basketball is so big in the Jewish community. We'll have him and Governor Shapiro back on the show. Explain this to us. You know,
Kevin, can I give you Jonathan Zazzo? He's also big in basketball too.
Yeah, somebody's got to explain that to me. I think that'd be a fascinating show. But anyway, I think the only legitimate gripe that you have about, because people say like, well, you know, he hasn't really had time to play with Kyle Lowry and Buddy Hield and, you know, all that, right? Offensively, what do you need to learn? Clear out, give him the ball, you know, do some DHOs and some pick and rolls. They're not running Brett Brown's motion offense here. It's nothing to teach him. I think defensively, you know, the coverages and understanding where Embiid likes to operate, that's probably going to be harder than the offensive side. But they got a couple games to figure it out here, so. Fuck, man, let's go. I'm back on board. We have earned the right to get back on board this team whenever we feel like it. Not just because of the process era, but because of the 2003 to 2012 Sixers, Doug Collins and Jason Capono and Reggie Evans and every other guy that we suffered through for those 10 years before the process kids were even born.
Eddie Jordan and the Princeton offense.
Edward Turner.
With his adult braces, it always just gets me.
The dark days of the mid-90s before Allen Iverson was drafted. There's a lot that Tony Sixers have suffered through that earns you like that automatic trip.
Chris Ford, remember Chris Ford? We loved Chris Ford. Beautiful mustache.
Who's Chris Ford? Right. Is that related to Ford in the chat?
Oh, I want to send something to Craig here. We found the reason for why the Philly's got off to a slow start. This was a Kyle Pagan special the other day. Now, normally, we would encourage people to express themselves artistically. You know,
can we just stop these?
I have 7 minutes left before I have to jump to a chat with one of our friends at a legal online sports book and talking about this for 7 minutes.
I got another meeting here.
Kevin, this thing, whatever the fuck this was, I was so upset because I think it was either Pagan or Big Bet Bob dropped this in, and I had never seen this guy before, and I wish I never had.
Play it. Play the song. Play the freaking song.
This is the cringiest shit I have seen.
Is it worse than the
Pop? What you know about Phillies fans? Record 3 million in the stands, going hard every season. Red and white will be bleeding, like Mike Schmidt on third base, like Jay Rowland. Home plate can't stop us. It's too late. It's a repeat of the 80s. Can that all work? Except you're fake. You should.
All right, thank you. All right, let's shift gears to the Flyers now.
I want my ears back.
That's what I think.
Listen.
That's what it just made my body do.
I'm going to go jump in the pool with my clothes on. Just get in a cold tub.
Mix the Go-Go Gadget high-energy remixes from a couple years ago look like Grammy winners, you know?
But, I want to give myself a swirly.
Yeah. Anyway. That was your... That was your music moment here. On the next show, I'll review the new Judas Priest album. Russ, what was your what did the Snow the Goalie crew think of Torts and his 15-minute epic?
I can only speak for myself, Kevin, because the last time I put anything out through a Snow the Goalie account, Anthony accosted me for doing so. So I'm gonna be very careful here with my words.
What did he put out that he accosted?
The April Fool's joke that Torts was going to join us on pregame at 6 o'clock before the game the other night.
That was great.
Very clearly, it was April Fool's. I even put the April Fool's disclaimer in the first reply, and I got a lot of good feedback on it. And there were some people who were like, "Oh my god, you guys are burying the hatchet! Like, this is great." And then like 2 hours later, they're like, "Oh motherfucker, it's April Fool's Day!" Ah, you know, but it was good. Everybody like, it was great. And then I get a call. No, I get a text from Ant. I get like, you know, Ant sends the novels. He's kind of like when you talk to your parent who's older and they use voice to text and there's no punctuation. He was getting really worked up about it. It has to do with me. Don't you think you should have asked me first? I'm like, no, because Torts said that silly podcast. It's our whole show. Ain't just you, sweet cheeks, you know?
Well, the best thing is that when Anthony is like replying to something in Slack, you know, he writes like a whole paragraph. So you just see the text at the bottom that says Anthony Sanfilippo is typing.
Yeah,
and then it goes on for like 5 minutes.
And sometimes it stops for a little bit. Like he takes a break. He maybe needs a hydration break because his fingers are typing so fast. You know, like,
bathroom break.
Got to take a little snack break. He's got to go get some gabagool. You know, he's got to check in on Gargano. Like, I don't know. But anyway, I don't know how the other guys totally reacted to it. We will have a show, I think, tomorrow over on Snow the Goalie. But my reaction to it, speaking on my behalf, is I think that it's pretty clear that there are people getting to Torts. I think that it's very clear that there are people in the organization who may or may not have said to him, the act is starting to run a little bit thin and you have to make amends with some of this. So like he came out a week ago, week and a half, and essentially apologized to Jordan Hall for not giving an answer about Felix Sandstrom. And then it also apologized to Felix Sandstrom for not giving an answer, which really made him look bad. Made Sandstrom look bad and also like made Torts look bad. Fans enjoyed it in the moment, but like in terms of holding guys accountable and everything, Sandstrom's a young goalie and he's forced into a role that he wasn't expected to be in, all that. Torts kind of the other night, he pulled back the curtain a little bit post game, said that he thought the team sucked, that they were soft, that Fedotov was the only guy who actively tried. The guy who only guy who showed up in the second period. Mm-hmm. And then I think what happened was we put this out, but Torts was a topic of conversation on the TSN Sports Center with Jayon Ray and what was the guy's name? Brian Hayes. It was not Kevin Hayes. His fingerprints weren't all over this segment.
Yeah. Not Kevin Hayes, Harry.
But I think it was Brian Hayes. And it was pretty much this guy was calling Torts out for it's never John Tortorella's fault, which is a fair critique, a fair criticism. I have compared Torts to Doc Rivers a lot, right? They've had good teams in the past. They've had stacked teams. One of them ended up winning a Stanley Cup, an NBA Finals. There's not a lot of internal self-reflection that happens with these guys. But Torts did kind of open up a little bit more, and the big takeaway was him saying that it's his job to make sure that these young guys especially understand that these games are not regular season games. You're here, you're close to the playoffs, and he said that he's done a shit job of getting them over the hump from regular season games to what these are. And so I think that it was a good press conference. I think that, like, across the board, he received mostly, like, good marks on it. And, like, I do think that for once he kind of took a little bit of accountability for how some of these things have gone. Now, I do think that he's committed some unforced errors. I think that scratching Sean Couturier was a risk that he took that he certainly did not have to take. And I don't think it played out the way or paid off or galvanized the team in the way that he might have wanted it to. They've now lost five straight games. It's a lot. It's a lot of games.
They can't buy a win.
And now they go into a weekend back-to-back against Buffalo and Columbus that they really need 4 points.
Would you start Fedotov off on Friday night or Saturday night?
I don't think it matters. I really don't. They're both road games. I would probably go back to Fedotov. I think that ultimately they're gonna want to ride Aris into the
ground,
into the playoffs. I think they're gonna want to ride Aris, but at the same time, like, I think he needed time off. I think that he's also been thrust into a role that he didn't expect to be in. You know, Redacted was the starter at the beginning of the season in goal, and then, you know, now he's off in London, Ontario, awaiting whatever the hell is going to come of that. And so, like, it's that cascading effect. A lot of guys are in roles they didn't expect to be in, and I think that Arison has been ridden a lot, and they kind of had to because he was certainly better than Cal Peterson and better than Felix Sandstrom. Fedotov, for what it's worth, was a guy that some in the organization thought 2 years ago could push Redacted for the top starter. You know,
well, he's not. Goal. I mean, he's not young. He's closer to 30.
27.
25. Yeah, I mean, so
he's 27. Yeah, he's played extensively in the KHL. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I think that was lost on some people. You know, and if you have to go to your very important meeting, Russ, feel free to drop off whenever you have to.
Well, are you guys gonna be going for a little bit, or is this gonna end in 5 minutes? Because if I get done,
I got one more. Do you think Torts will be out of head coach, go to front office after this year?
That's a great question. Hopefully you'll be here in about 10 minutes if I get this meeting done in time. And I'll answer.
If we're still going, you are more than welcome. We still got to get into the
Eagles. I will hop back on. So keep this thing going.
All right.
I'm down. All right, bye.
We need to get like a Russian on the show to come tell us why Fedotov pronounces his name like that. But every other time I've seen any other name like that, it's not pronounced like that. You know, Sergei Fedorov, right? It was not Fedorov. So we'll have to go into Northeast Philly and ask a couple Russians there, you know, why.
We can just come down to Miami, too, because there's a lot of Russians down here as well. We can do
that. There Russians in Miami? Really?
There's a lot of Russians in South Florida. Oh, yeah. There's a lot.
So it seems like there's a lot of everything in South Florida. It's a very desirable destination.
It is a desirable location, but it's also just like, just get me to stay. I'm going to stay in Broward and just deal with my people instead anyways.
So. All right. Fair enough. I think with Torts, it's weird because we've just been like on a roller coaster with him. You never know what you're going to get. I was shocked that he offered that apology about the Felix Sandstrom thing. I didn't think that was necessary either. And, but we had Kevin on last week, Kevin Curtis, and he's like, Torts has been great to work with. You know, I think sometimes people see the Anthony thing and think that's like a, you know, they see these brief post game pressers, but they may not pay attention necessarily to, you know, like the off day stuff where Torts is in.
I feel like that's the big thing. Like, we don't see the off day stuff, but it's like everybody else does. And we just like assume it's like he's just a horrible person on game day, anyways.
I do disagree with what Eric Lindros said to the Hockey News the other day when he was asked about the, I guess they got into the Cutter Gauthier thing, and he didn't understand why the Flyers had to publicize the reason for which the trade for Jamie Drysdale happened. And his take was sort of like, you know, make the trade, you say you wanted this guy, and then move on. Well, no, they had to explain to people why one of their best prospects in the last couple of years was traded, right? So the quote from Lindros is, I would have focused on just saying we wanted Jamie Drysdale and we had to give up this player. That's how I would have dealt with it. I wouldn't have publicized the situation. I would have just traded the kid. I had a great time in Philly, said Lindros, but if he thinks he's going to have a better time someplace else, then go for it. It's a player's right.
Yeah.
The better the city and the organization treats a guy, the more it's going to attract guys. That's a big part of it. Well,
says a player who forced his way out of Philly because he hated the Doctors. Says a player who went to the Rangers, didn't do jack diddly poo, didn't do anything with Toronto or anything in his career in Dallas. So it's like, it's kind of a spade, I like to say.
It is a little bit off base for him to say it. Number one, you can't just tell Flyers fans like, well, we really wanted Jamie Drysdale. Don't ask any more questions for why, you know. Here's the rest of the quote. As far as how the Flyers handled the situation, Lindros said he wondered why GM Danny Briere even mentioned that Gauthier had no interest in signing. After all, the Flyers ended up getting Drysdale on the trade, who some suggest might end up becoming a better player than Gauthier. Think about how it was handled, said Lindros. It's like going to the bar when you're younger and you ask a girl out. If she says no, You don't go to your buddies and say, she shut me down. You know what I mean? I don't know about you. I had the opposite. I would do the complete opposite thing.
Yeah.
Tell your friends about it, you know, but it's kind of a weird example.
It's a weird one. To use, I was not. But, welcome back, Eric Contreras.
Because it's like you have to. I mean, and if you go back to that night, fans were, you know, they had him like hook, line, and not hook, line, and sinker. I mean, nobody was hoodwinked, right? But I mean, like, they bought the explanation, and they were like, okay, this kid doesn't want to play here. Then see ya. You know, I thought that was really smart for them to do that. Like, what do they give a shit what Cutter Gauthier thinks about how what they said about him on the way out? If you don't want to be here, you don't want to be here. That resonated, you know. The thing with Lindros too, I know people point to him, you know, and the not wanting to play for the Nordiques and all that. The difference between him and Gauthier is that Eric Lindros told the Quebec Nordiques before the draft, long before the draft, that he didn't want to go there. So his situation and the Cutter Gauthier thing is fundamentally different. It does make it kind of seem weird that he's saying what he's saying now, considering that he never played for the team that, you know, was number one in the draft order and selected him, you know? So,
Even he knew, I read it. There's like docs about this made, like, he knew, like, the Quebec Nordiques are a dumpster fire. Why should I trust this team? And they couldn't make the trade right the first time. Anyways, they went to two trades. It was like one to the Flyers, one to the Rangers, and they call in an arbitrator and stuff, which is wild.
Yeah. And you don't ever want that to become like precedent. That's a problem. I mean, if you have a Cutter Gauthier scenario, you have an Eric Lindros scenario, or if it's a rare kind of thing, okay, so be it. But you don't want to give people hints to say, like, well, I can just refuse to play for the team that drafts me. And that's not a precedent that you want to set. Yeah.
Kevin Hayes did that when he didn't want to play for Chicago. Anyways, when he got drafted, fun fact for you guys.
Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? You know, it's funny how these things kind of come to, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, right?
Yeah. People forget that.
I don't know. It's funny too, to get it back to the actual on ice stuff. Mm-hmm. So the complaint that I had last week was they can't get their best guys on the ice in overtime.
Yeah.
So they get it to overtime once again against the Islanders the other night. Morgan Frost has a late goal, 3-3. Mm-hmm. They go to OT. They do get Travis Konecny on the ice. They do get Morgan Frost on the ice. Morgan Frost turns the puck over and the Islanders score. But it was just it looked like they were almost like trying to be so conservative that they just spent the entirety of the overtime, a minute and a half before the Islanders scored, just kind of like backtracking, retreating into their own zone. And that didn't work either. And they didn't get a single shot off. And like, part of me is just like, all right, you try the defensive thing, put your best two-way forwards out there and kind of like ease into it. And then it's like, now Owen Tippett and Travis Konecny come off the bench with some speed or whatever. I'm at the point now where I just say, fuck it, just put your best guys out there. Try to fight fire with fire. These things are going to be over in 90 seconds anyway, so you might as well go down swinging, which they haven't. And that was that could have been a big 2 points for them, because it would have put them clear of the games in hand number that the Islanders have.
Yeah. I've been saying this forever. Like, put your best player there, just get the game over with, honestly. And how they just like, they did that, but they didn't do it the way I wanted, honestly. But it's like, they just fucked it up, honestly. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, come on. Like, I know Frost is one of our best players, but I'd rather see Tippett, Konecny, than throw Sanheim on the back end anyways. Then you just figure it out after that. And also, Sean Couturier's day-to-day is huge.
They're one of the worst overtime teams in the NHL. I want to say they have, like, what, 11 overtime losses just off the top of my head?
The Islanders are, they've lost a lot in overtime this year.
Yeah. Well, both of them are. I think I had a good point I was going to make here. I think the Flyers, like, you see the best way that you see the roster deficiencies is when you remove four guys from the ice and you open it up and you turn it into a speed and skill game where that's not really what they have, you know?
Yeah,
they've got Tippett and they've got Konecny, but they don't have it. Right. I mean, it's like you can't play your blue collar, you know, forechecking and backchecking game, and that doesn't exist in overtime. And it's like all of a sudden it's like, OK, now I feel like I'm looking at a flawed team.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's when points of the game, speed and skill are kind of amplified in that diminished setting. Then, I'm just like sort of scratching my head there. But, you know, like I said, man, I don't, you know, if they didn't win another game for the rest of the year, I would have called it a success anyway. I just hope. And I don't care what Tort says or doesn't say, you know, if he's getting results out of these guys. I just wonder if he's just going to burn himself out and everybody's going to get burned out on him.
I feel he's burning himself out on everybody. And I could honestly said this, like, that reported him wanting to go to the front office may happen, honestly. And insert Craig Berube coming back, I feel. That's how I feel. That's what I'm feeling, honestly. So
if Russ comes back, we can pick that up with him. But let's get to the Hassan Reddick thing.
Let's get to the Eagles.
Let's get it back to the Eagles. Yeah. So there was
banging on my door right now. So
you got somebody knocking on your door?
No, I'm not. I'm just being a joke anyway. Let's get back to the Eagles. I have a PD after me right now.
So Hassan Reddick was traded to the Jets, as you well know. Third rounder, conditional second, or conditional second rounder, perhaps. So Jeff McClain was on 97.5 The Fanatic the other day. The aggregator accounts took his quote, butchered the shit out of it, and spread it all over the internet, as they usually do. JPA Football, whoever the fuck that is, there may have been some concerns of former Eagles pass rusher Hassan Reddick chasing sacks, according to Jeff McClain. I think there were some concerns about him chasing sacks. I don't know that specifically what Fletcher Cox was talking about, blah, blah, blah. So I went and did everybody the favor of actually listening to Jeff's interview, transcribing most of the relevant part of it. And I will read it this way so that everybody has a better understanding of it. Hassan Reddick kind of struggled down the stretch. I think there were some concerns about him, concerns about whether he was chasing sacks. He's never been a great run defender. Guys hit the edge, and he wasn't alone in terms of struggling down the stretch, especially after they made the switch at defensive coordinator. Again, you can see the argument for the Eagles not wanting to restructure his deal. Now, they had to do something this offseason because $21 million in cap is not what they wanted to pay him. They're in a situation where they wanted to redo something as well, but he wants to get paid more. And the question, there's a typo there. Beautiful, Kevin. Thank you. The question is about whether this deal is good or not. It's going to come down to what the Jets end up giving him, right? If he signs a one-year deal, then you're like, okay, well, couldn't the Eagles have done that? And if he signs a long-term deal, which I think it will be, then you can understand why both sides agreed that something like this needed to be done. Okay, now at this point, John Kincaid asks a follow-up question. If the chasing sacks thing alludes to Fletcher Cox talking about players freelancing, at the end of the year,
The Dominican Sue, I like to say.
Jeff continues. He says, I guess if Josh Sweat hadn't looked around, because he as well had permission to seek a trade, if he had found something better and moved on, and the Eagles found the compensation they wanted in return, then maybe they would have been inclined to keep Hassan a little bit more. But once I think Josh Sweat returned, obviously they moved ahead and got Bryce Huff to come in as well. Then I thought it was a foregone conclusion that Hassan would leave. Again, I don't know if what they have is better. I think the Eagles are projecting Bryce Huff to be a better player than he has in his first four seasons, and they're thinking that Hassan Reddick is on the decline. To answer your question about chasing sacks, I think, yes, certainly. I don't know if that's specifically what Fletcher Cox was referencing, but I'd heard from people in the organization that Hassan was one of the guys they thought was doing that. I think Josh Sweat as well, to some extent, but this could have been avoided if Howie Roseman had decided to restructure Hassan's deal. I think you can look at it both ways. Would he have felt under those circumstances that he had to get a higher number of sacks because he's going to have to get paid in the offseason? Maybe if you had given him some sweeteners in his deal, like they did for Brandon Graham in 2015, I believe, maybe he would have performed a little bit more. I can see it both ways. Fletcher Cox, I don't know specifically it was him, but he was a guy at one point in his career. I think the Eagles thought the same thing about him as well. So it happens. You understand why guys are doing that, because sacks are so important to how they get paid, right? So that adds some flavor to it. It's more like, look, you know, for whatever reason, right or wrong, the sack is valued, as I bring Rush Joy back on the show right now, the sack is valued and factored into, you know, contract negotiations for edge rushers and outside linebackers more than anything. It's like, if they're not going to pay me, or I want to get this contract for them, then I got to up these sack totals, you know, especially after I got off to a slow start with the John Tortorella club hand, you know? Yeah. So I understand all of that, but people then ask the question, say, okay, so you're mad at your best pass rusher searching for sacks. Well, not necessarily, but like maybe losing contain or letting a guy get outside of him, or, you know, going too far up the field and getting beat on play action or something. So yes, I mean, 9 times out of 10, you want Hassan Reddick rushing the quarterback and trying to bring him down and trying to get sacks. But when they say chasing sacks, they talk about doing that in lieu of keeping your responsibilities, right?
Yeah, like freelancing pretty much.
Freelancing.
Like, the Ndamukong Suh did it the whole time he was down here in Miami. He just freelanced anyways. So I'm also not surprised. That's what most defensive linemen will do anyways. If they're trying to get a contract, I'm going to freelance. Forget it, you know? Forget the run play. I'll just go for the quarterback.
So that's that, you know. And I think like sacks are misleading too. I mean, the sacks are the easiest thing that we can point to for edge rushers, but, you know, pass rush win rate is huge. You know, I used the example in the article that I did earlier today. Like, you know, if you were a defensive end in the AFC East and you played against Brady twice a year for 10 years in a row, you probably didn't get close to him because he's getting the ball out every 2 seconds. Does that mean you're a bad defensive end because you didn't sack Tom Brady? Not necessarily. So I think a lot of that can be misleading. But there's your full context, Russ, for the Hassan Reddick thing, for the aggregator accounts who just, you know, take snippets and bullshit. I mean, that aggregator account there is talking about a Fletcher Cox quote that doesn't, like, have any context to it at all. Like, nobody knows what Fletcher Cox was talking about in the way that tweet is presented. But luckily, you have fair and balanced,
hard-hitting journalists.
Like, yeah, Helen, like Kincaid, Crossing Broad. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. It's not just the good looks and the boyish charm.
And the cool t-shirts.
That's right.
Thank you. So that's your Eagles moment here. I'm sorry. What were we supposed to ask Russ when he came back on the show?
Russ, John Tortorella, there was a report. It was on 590 in Sports Canada. Like, John Tortorella wanted to go up to the front office in Columbus. Yomar Kekulainen said, bleep you, you ain't your coaching still. Do we see that situation happening sometime in Philadelphia?
It's a great question. I actually have to go on another call, so
I'm just kidding.
I don't know. I think that the organization is committed to him being part of this thing going forward, but I've long held the belief that he's not going to be the guy on the bench when they're ready to flip the switch. And presumably when they're ready to quote-unquote flip the switch, it's when Mishkov is over here, likely in 2026. Yeah. So he's not a young guy. Doesn't mean that he can't coach, right? Doesn't mean that he couldn't coach into his 70s, but – you know, we have two presidential candidates that are, you know, old. We don't need a coach trying to, like, who's going to be older? Joe Biden at the end of a second term, potentially, or John Tortorella when he's done coaching the Flyers? You know, I think it's entirely possible he moves upstairs. There are two guys who I think are the names that will be in contention if he does move upstairs. Because, like, honestly, he might look at it and just go, this ain't it. Like, you go back to the press conference from yesterday or whatever, but, like, him talking about how some guys just don't have it to compete in these games and in these moments. He might honestly look at it and go, like, fuck this. Like, I've done what I can, and, like, I'm just ready to be done. Mm-hmm. One of two things happens. Craig Berube still doesn't have a job. There have been teams that have expressed interest in Craig Berube. He has not taken a job in any of the markets that have fired their coach this year. He's come on Snow the Goalie and Press Row Show a couple of times this season, and I haven't gotten the feeling that he was dying to jump back in just for the sake of getting the first job, that it had to be the right job. This, I think, he would consider to be the right job. The other name is Brad Shaw, who has worked wonders with the blue line, and especially through the injuries they've had, he's done a tremendous job. I think that if they were looking to do an internal hire, an internal promotion, it would be Brad Shaw. If they were looking outside of the organization, probably be Craig Berube would get an interview, would certainly be high on their list. Would they go from Tortorella to a Mike Babcock? No. Would they go from a Tortorella to a Joel Quenneville, you know, some people forget became the coach of the Flyers a few years ago?
I remember somebody
running a report and then doing a whole lot of bragging about being an insider. Which also happened to come a couple of days after I said, if you know anything, you should actually report it instead of shitting on people who do report things. And then that didn't go well so well for her. But anyway, we come back to this. I think it would be Berube or Shaw, but I'm not so sure. Like, if John Tortorella has an inkling that Mishkov comes over sooner, right? Like, in fairness, the Flyers just brought over Kolosov, who played in the KHL and was from Belarus, not from Russia. And they pulled Ivan Fedotov out of what seemingly was an impervious contract with the KHL, with Moscow. Is it possible they could figure out a way to get Mishkov out sooner? Maybe. And if he does, and you're Torts, then maybe you say, all right, like, now I have a new toy. Mm-hmm. And I have somebody who can be dynamic. And then maybe he does want to stick around. But if it really does look like 2026, he has to look at it and say, do I think I want to coach that long? And I don't know what his answer is. You want to answer Ant's questions? I've never tried to ask him a question. Maybe I'll get an answer out of him. But
do it, Russ.
I'm not so sure. Philly fan actually brought up a good one, too. If Brind'Amour gets let go from Carolina halfway through next year, if he doesn't get to the Eastern Conference Finals, or they have a slow start next year, I don't see a scenario where Carolina lets Brendan Moore go. I don't. I think that he's just become such a huge part of what they're doing that they're not going to move him. They're not going to do a knee-jerk move. Is he a guy who maybe would have interest in a job here if he did get let go by Carolina? Maybe. Possible. Would there be people in the organization interested in the other way? Yeah, probably. But I don't know.
I don't see Claude Julien walking through this door anyways. He ain't getting
it. I don't see Bruce Boudreau's roundhead walking through that door.
No.
I don't see Ken Hitchcock walking through that door.
Damn it, Ross.
I some retreads. Are there any good NHL retreads out there? By the way, one of my favorite things of the Chuck Fletcher era was
how they best retread.
They had to have consultants tell them that John Tortorella was a good candidate, right? I mean, like, you had to go to an agency to give you we found this great coach. His name's John Tortorella.
You have to remember though. So if you go back, there are a lot of elements to that and why it happened and how it happened, but that was the prior regime. That was the Dave Scott regime. That was the Val Camillo dumpster regime. Fire. And look, I still believe very firmly that the reason they brought in that outside firm is because they didn't trust Chuck Fletcher to get the best coach because he was afraid of losing his job, and it ended up happening. The one coach that he did not want was John Tortorella because Torts eats up front office guys, and Fletcher had been here for long enough and hadn't really moved the needle on this thing enough that, like, it was very clear Torts was going to win that power struggle, and it ended up happening.
But it's just funny. It's like, imagine if the Eagles fired Nick Sirianni and then they got a consultancy, a consultant group to tell them, hey, we found this guy, Bill Belichick. You know, here's our recommendation. Now it's like, no shit.
Didn't Greg Bedard say that and everyone got really mad in Philly Twitter and everybody?
Maybe. I got to be a consultant at some point in my life. That is the biggest grift on the planet, man, a consultant. Well, let me tell you what you should do. You know, we should change the mic flags. We should make them triangles instead of squares. Okay, write me my $10,000 check for today, and then I'm going to go fuck off back to my Lower Merion mansion or whatever the consultants do. Anyway, that's how you can tell. I feel
Kinker's not bitter at all. You can tell.
Very strongly about consultants in the television news thing. Speaking of television.
Also in radio. And also in radio, they do a horrible job too.
Well, it's a universal theme. I was going to say we can end on the Apodi thing if you guys want to talk.
I was going to say just wait until 97.5 or PHLY or the Philadelphia Inquirer make an offer to Kevin Kincaid to be a consultant for their brand.
Here's what you got to do. First of all,
Kevin oversees the operation at Crossing Broad, which is significantly better on the social media than any of those outlets, and you could make the case that Kevin could resurrect the Anki. We find out. Can you resurrect 97.5, 610, 632?
My consultancy would be like, okay, first you have to have to trim down your staff to 2.5 people, and then you have to find a generational superstar like Kyle Pagan, and then find somebody like myself who is willing to write like 8 stories a day and also be the editor. And once you find those people, then you're good, you know?
Maybe you have to replace Coach Camille at PHLY, and in doing so, your only thing, Kevin, and I think you can do this. I do believe in your ability. You just can't promise a woman tickets to an Eagles game in her DMs and then ask her to go get munchies. You can't do that. Okay? As long as you can promise that you won't do that, as long as you promise that you won't be a fucking creep who tells somebody that he has tickets and when she inquires says, why don't you come out to our hockey podcast watch party? If you can promise that, Kevin, we can probably get you a job. I'll even serve as your agent on that deal, okay?
As the site editor who inherited the site from the maestro, I'm trying to be less combative these days. So, Russ,
I'm
just
not being combative. I'm not being. What's being combative?
No, I know you're not. I just like.
That was.
I just,
listen,
you know,
we didn't. We, by the way, that was on the Twitter. That was on the Twitter. The lady put up the screenshots, all right?
I know.
I'm not breaking any story. I'm not putting anything on the ether that people don't want out there.
But you know, I gotta be the big J journalist in these cases and maintain relationship.
You're wearing a Grateful Dead shirt with Motorhead hanging behind you and your Emmy over the other shoulder. All right. Let's not go Capital J journalist here, all right, fella? Like,
I ain't no Capital J journalist either. I'm just a homie.
Yeah, but my consultancy, yeah, would just be like, create the smallest possible staff you can, do like 6 to 10 posts a day, and just, you know, just wing it. You don't need all these other people, you know, there's too many people working at a lot of these places. But anyway,
yeah, trim it down.
By the way, David Berkowitz over on YouTube with a very good comment here, Kevin, that you're married with kids. You're smarter than that. So we can listen. I will not vouch for Kevin Kincaid's character, but if you're looking for a consultant, I can tell you that as long as he gives me 33% of his next deal, I will gladly say on record that Kevin Kincaid is a trustable guy.
There you go.
Listen, I'll say it anyways. Kevin, you don't need to throw me a percentage at all.
Well, the other suggestion I would make to a lot of these places is you got to find writers who will write more than one story a day, right? Let's start there, and then we will.
Are we allowed just really quickly? Because I don't want to cause a problem here. All right, I'm a nice guy. I said I'm not going to war with anybody because I continue to reiterate that I wish everybody well. Les Bowen is going to be writing for PHLY, apparently one story a week or something. Okay. Ed Barkowitz got brought on. Is there anybody else from the Inquirer that had a buyout that could be a consultant or start writing over there? Like who else is left from that buyout, like from the last buyout rounds, that like isn't actively writing anywhere?
There's a lot of them. But some of them are just retired. Like Bob
who
Ford
else is left?
Bob Ford's not coming back. Phil Anastasia, Rick O'Brien, you know. Bob Brookover went to NJ.com. There's some of them are still floating around.
How about older Rich Hoffman? Older Rich Hoffman?
Hmm. He's been like retired for a while, I think. I don't know if he was a buyout. Yeah.
Dick Girardi?
No, there was a handful. Yeah. I mean, some just don't want to work and others found, you know, I don't know. Is Domowich doing anything with anybody?
I don't know.
He was doing like A2D or something for a little bit, I want to say.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I think it's a very interesting, listen, I am occasionally critical of things when I see things that I think it's fair to be critical of. I think that they are still trying to figure out what they are. And I think hiring a bunch of these guys, it's weird because if you look at their brand in other cities, it's kind of like a Barstool-ish thing, but here it's not. Yeah. And I don't know who did the marketing. Well, I do, but I'm going to posit falsely that I don't know who gauged the market and made some of these decisions, but like, it is very different tonally than what they've done elsewhere. I'm a little bit confused why they decided to go the route they have, but we'll see if it works. Maybe it will. I'm not sure. Again, wish everybody the best. Media jobs are disappearing. We want more media jobs out there for good people who are working hard, who are doing a good job.
So the Jamie Apodi thing, we can wrap on this. I know some people were asking about it. What happened to her? Well, we've been trying to find out for the last 5 months now. I mean, the Cliff's notes for people who aren't familiar is that she's been off the air since some point in October after the Phillies run. And she's not talking and management is not talking and nobody over there is talking. And they're under some kind of gag order like I've never seen before in my entire life. And I'm telling you that when I talk to people, when I reach out to people over there, anybody who has anything to do with any of that at all, the forcefulness of the no comments and just the scared shitlessness factor is incredible. You know, people just like afraid to get in trouble and afraid for their jobs. And so I think it's very obvious that we're in some kind of legal territory, contractual thing here, you know, where my hunch is that they took her off the air and she fought it and got a lawyer and sued. And, you know, here we are probably just, I've been just trying to keep it quiet while, you know, both sides figure out some kind of exit strategy or like a settlement or something along those lines. You know, that's the best that I've kind of been able to determine here. You know, but the one thing that I was able to kind of dig up a little bit of was there have been some issues in the past. I was told by multiple sources of just kind of like indiscretions in the field with press credentials, you know, just kind of being loose with rules. I had people telling me that, you know, she was bringing her kids around Citizens Bank Park and, you know, like you're setting up for a live shot or something like that. Maybe they're like running around on the field before the game or something like that. Or, you know, you ask a player for something that's not related to like a, you know, a television thing or whatever, you know, maybe like a request for something else. I think in the article I used the example of, you know, like Russ isn't going to use his press pass at, you know, to do Snow the goalie, right? Like walk down in the locker room and find Travis Sanheim before the game and say, hey, can you sign this like stick for my nephew or something like that? You know, like that's an example of kind of like where like when you're in the field, you're expected to work. You're working media, right? And yeah, your credentials not really meant to be abused. And so I was told that there were issues there with her and with the Phillies and with Action News. Now, how much of that had anything to do with them taking her off the air? I'm not totally sure. I mean, that was just one example that I was given by some people. You know, and I don't. It seems to me like there's a lot of stuff that probably built up over time. I mean, that's my best guess here. But I think what makes it most difficult is that a lot of times, like, these things end with like non-disclosure agreements, you know, where people just kind of earn the rest of their contract money. That's why she's silent, right? Because while you remain under contract, you kind of get in these situations where you're iced out, and it's just like, all right, you're gonna do. Your lawyer tells you, like, you're gonna sit here, and what you're gonna do for the next six months is jack shit. You're gonna do nothing. And you know, you kind of collect your paycheck and they figure out a way to make it suitable for both sides. And then even after that, you know, you might not hear anything from those people again. So it's funny because people ask me, and I get some emails like, who gives a shit about any of this? Like, why are you pursuing this? Why are you talking about it? Personally, I don't care, but I look at like what people are interested in, what people email me about and what people click on. And Jamie Apodi mystery employment status update number 3 was the most read article on the site for the month of March. So obviously people care. She's got a lot of fans, a lot of people who are interested, who want to know what's going on. And Action News is a powerhouse in Philadelphia, and people are interested and want to know what the hell's going on over there. And like, quite frankly, I think it's just like fascinating that this is the second time in like 2 years they've just completely disappeared somebody over there with no explanation at all. Like Jeff Skavirsky.
Can they reappear Matvei Mishkov in the U.S.? Can we like do the inverse? Can we send the 6 ABC people to do the opposite? We'll send them Carter Hart if they send us Matvei Mishkov. Is that fair?
Do the deal, Russ. Do the deal.
I had to say the name instead of redacted because I want to make sure that we're putting it, you know, out there in the ether that 6ABC can negotiate this deal.
I just think it's funny too, and I would say this as a final point. You guys can say whatever you want to say about it, but you know, Action News, The Inquirer. I'm like the only person really who digs into any media outlets in Philadelphia anymore. You know, Rob at the Inquirer will do like radio stuff for sure. Like Jeff Blumenthal will report on those things as well, but nobody like kind of dives into it like I do. And it's just funny to be continually like shot down and gaslit and like criticized by people who do what I'm trying to do on a daily basis, right? So we're going to send an investigative team out to, you know, talk about this person or that person. But when I ask questions of them or ask their PR guy to just return a friggin' email or whatever the case, you know, I'm the enemy, right? Like, you know, so suddenly all those principles don't matter. Right? It's just kind of like funny in an ironic way. It's like reporting for me, but not for thee, you know? And so when the family-friendly Disney television station that's number one disappears a popular sports anchor from the air and nobody knows what happened to her, they won't say a damn thing. And all the people who are loyal to that station, who have watched that station for years and years, they get nothing from them. They get no answers. They get no explanation for why their favorite anchor is gone. And to me, that's just funny and somewhat hypocritical. And I understand there's contractual stuff, lawyers involved. And so you can't talk, but it's still the optics of it are just so stupid. You know, it's like, you can't ask questions of the question askers, you know, like journalists, you know, act like they're all offended when people practice journalism on them.
Yeah. As a reader, I enjoy the story because I didn't know about the story at all. And it's like, this is crazy, like how ABC6 is just sweeping people under the rug. Like, oh, she's gone now. It's like, what the heck? It's like, we didn't get the whole story about it. And like, I always say, Kevin, you're probably the only true journalism left anyways, and especially with like TV and radio wars. So
it's just dumb. It's like, I don't, you know, I guess, yes, you do need people to report on the reporters, right? It's strange. It makes me laugh sometimes, but like I see the people who read these stories and how many people email me and care about it. And I'm like, all right, well, I mean, we're doing something other people aren't doing. So that's where we kind of found a niche there. But people always come to you and they say like, oh, why are you obsessed? Why are you obsessed with this? Everybody always says, why are you obsessed with this? I'm like, I'm not, man. I'm just like doing what readers are kind of interested in. I'm not going to knock on Jamie Apodi's friggin' door, right? This is not like investigating Frank Rizzo walking up to his house with a camera and saying like, why did you you're accused of doing this. What do you say? Like, we're not doing that. But it's just funny that like, yeah, I mean, like all these big, bad journalism outlets here, you know, they do all their reporting and, you know, work with whistleblowers and sources and all that stuff. And then it's like their shit doesn't stink when you try to, you know, ask questions of them and say like, well, what happened to this person? You know, and all of a sudden, like, I'm the scum of the earth. So it just makes you kind of laugh in a way.
I hear you.
Double standards is.
I have to be honest. I don't get any of this. I don't get why people are so into the Jamie Apode mystery updates, but that is part of the beauty of Crossing Broad, because there are very few. Oh, look at that. Look at that crutch.
Right. Are you bringing Sorry, I didn't even close it. The dog walked in and opened the door, and I can't reach it, so I use my crutches to lean over to the.
You know. Kevin Kincaid has a few crutches. His Emmy, his Philadelphia Union coverage, his power over Kyle Pagan. These are his crutches.
His love for Motorhead.
That's his vice. His love for Motorhead is his vice. His Judas Priest knowledge is also a key element. I just like Jamie Apode. I think I met one time at a Philadelphia Union media game. It was very nice. Because I didn't grow up in this area, I guess I just don't have an affinity for anybody in local news. Like, I didn't grow up watching Jim Gardner. I have no baseline. Like, there's no nostalgia. My nostalgia is tied specifically to, like, the former Comcast Sportsnet crew and, like, some of the people who were done dirty on their way out, like the Neil Hartmans and the Ron Burks and even the Derek Guns and Leslie Goodell. Like, those people I look at and, like, I guess that's where I'm tied in more with them in the same way that people from this area would be tied into the local news people. But, like, I'm shocked by how many people genuinely care. And you know what? To Jamie Apode, good on you, because that's not a role I wouldn't think that would garner so much support and so many fans. But she clearly has made an impact on a lot of people for them to be kind of hanging on every word that Kevin writes about it. So it's something.
Well, listen, and here's the thing too. I mean, a lot of, like, I worked in television. I think television more so than other mediums. Like, there's a relationship between the viewer and the station and the various journalists and the anchors that's built on trust. People watch Jim Gardner for years because they just were familiar with him and they were comfortable with him and there was a loyalty there, and they went to Action News because they trusted the information that they were getting that was being read by this talent that they enjoyed, you know? And so, you know, when it's a one-way street and they will give you information and they say, trust this information, but you ask a question of them and say, what happened to this anchor that we've been loyal to for 20 some years now? You don't get shit in return. And that rubs a lot of people the wrong way, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it interesting. You know, the fact that it's kind of like, we're going to tell you all this stuff and we're going to ask you to trust us and trust our anchors and our journalism. But, oh, sorry, we can't tell you what's going on with us. You know, and again, to reiterate, like, nobody's naive here. I get you got like contractual shit and whatever, but that station, especially Action News, has had such a foothold in this market for so long that I think they're kind of a different kind of animal than a lot of other outlets, you know.
I think it's also just one of those things, like, they have no reason. I mean, other than probably legally, if there's a thing going on between them and Apode, they just have no reason to bring it up, because to them, there are so few people covering it. It's not like Eyewitness News is covering it, right? It's not like Fox 29 has Mike Jarek, like, doing a two-minute monologue about it every day, right? You know, they're not throwing it to Bob Kelly to do the chasing the white Bronco.
No, but you know what else?
It's Jamie Apode in it. So,
and you know what else is? It's not, Russ. Is like when I was at Eyewitness News, we had the Alicia Lane and Larry Menti thing going on, which of course we were not going to report on ourselves there, but like the New York Post would report that shit, because that was a lot more like dicey and juicy, you know, because you had somebody punch a cop in the face and then the other one was hacking the other one's emails. So that was interesting to people. This, you know, it's a little different than just, you know, a sports anchor disappearing for no reason, but yeah, different strokes there in those cases. But all right, we've gone on long enough now. I want to make sure Craig can survive here and get to lunch at some point, so I think we're gonna call it.
Can we bring Craig on to show everybody his fresh cut? Craig, come on the show. Show everybody the do.
Craig,
see, on Monday show, I pop him on. I make him uncomfortable.
You put him on manually, like you add him to the show?
I put him on a couple of times, because you know what, I gotta keep him on his toes.
Well, listen, Craig did a great job.
Oh, he covered the camera.
He covered the camera. Okay, yeah. He did a great job today, though. Craig was great. Appreciate you guys. Thank you, Russ, for jumping on twice. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you to everybody in the chat. Thank you to Mike Gill. Check him out, 97.3 ESPN, the Sports Bash, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday. Good show. Go Phillies, go Flyers, go everybody. And we will see you next time.